Welcome back. Even though the 4th of July has come and gone, the summer driving season is just heating up, so I thought it'd be a good time to check in with the car doctor, John Paul from AAA Northeast, to bring us a little update on how things are going so far and what's up for the rest of the summer. John, great to see you again.
Great to be back with you, Joe. Looks like it's going to be a busy summer season. 4th of July broke all kinds of records, lots of people on the road. Still, the cheapest way to travel is still to get in your car, even though gas prices have been bouncing around a little bit. Right now in Massachusetts, the average is about $3.05. That is up about 6 cents since the beginning of the month, but down about 45 cents since last year. So, you know, compared to last year, the prices are a little bit better. The wholesale price of gasoline is about $2.16 a gallon for what is really amounts to next month's gasoline. So there's profit to be made. Gas stations are making a little bit of money right now, and the crude oil prices are fluctuating right around $67 to $69 a barrel. And there are, depends on what side of the argument you're on, whether that's good or bad. To me, that's about where wholesale prices of oil should be, right in that mid $60 a barrel range. I think that's where they belong. You know, the people who speculate on that kind of stuff would like to, you know, buy it here and sell it when it gets to 90. But that's something I've never been good at. So, but no, I think right now we're in a pretty good place gasoline price wise. Sure, everybody would like to see lower prices, but this is summer driving season, and to see prices less than last year is always a good thing.
Yeah, I know. I always ask you to kind of predict where they'll be going for the rest of the year. There's a lot going on in the world, I know, that will have an impact on that, right?
And that's really, really it. I mean, it comes down, the very basics of gasoline prices are supply and demand. And it, we really have to look at where the supply is, where it's coming from. OPEC and the OPEC nations are pumping more fuel than they have been, which is what's, I think, keeping part of the market somewhat under control. With tariffs and what's going on with Russia and all of that, who knows really what's going to happen? But I think right now we're seeing pretty good stability when it comes to gas prices.
Okay. Seeing as you mentioned tariffs, let's dive into that a little bit deeper, if we can, and talk about how they may impact the price of new and or used cars going forward.
Yeah, it's really going to impact everything. Even the cars that are made in the United States, those cars are made from steel and aluminum that comes typically from outside of the United States, so there's tariffs on that. Parts of those vehicles, you think of something like a Ford F-150 pickup truck, you know, made in America, made in Detroit. Well, it is, but the axles and drive shafts are not made here. The very popular Ford Maverick truck is made in Mexico. So all of these vehicles are going to be subject to some tariff pricing at some point. Hyundai and Kia, who are also making cars in the United States, said they will hold their prices even with tariffs. But in the small print of what they said was, as long as possible.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So they said, yes, we will, but we'll try to do the best we can.
They left them themselves an out,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Because they don't know, right?
I would suspect that over the next year, we'll probably see a couple $1,000s per vehicle increase due to tariffs.
Wow.
Some will be higher depending where they come from. Even electric cars like Tesla, you know, that's a very American car. It's made in wherever they make them, Las Vegas. But it is so intense on electronics, mm-hmm. All the chips and computer components all come from outside of the U.S. and they're subject to tariffs. So the idea that we'll bring more manufacturing into the United States is always a good thing, but it probably takes a year to permit something as big as a factory, and it probably takes 4 or 5 years to build it and then get it operational. So even if the tariffs do encourage manufacturers to build more cars here, it's going to be years before we really see the real benefit of that.
Yeah.
And the downside of that is there was a bit of a rush. People went out and bought cars before the tariffs kicked in,
yes,
hoping to try to, head off any price increases. But if new car sales go down, used car prices are going to go up mm-hmm. because you can't manufacture used cars. Used cars are solely based on, they come out of rental fleets, they come out of trade-ins, and if people aren't trading in their cars, the used cars that are on the lot are going to be selling for a premium.
Yeah, and we're also with elevated interest rates as well for folks who need, you know, a loan for a new car, and that's going to have an impact as well on the cost, I'm sure.
Oh, sure. And Ford just came out with, they had employee pricing on their vehicles last month. Now they have 0% interest and maybe 0% down or something like that.
For qualified buyers, as they say.
Yeah, yes. For qualified buyers, right. Yeah. And those are things you have to watch out a little bit for, too, because 0% down sounds great, but if you keep the car 3 or 4 years, you may find out that even though you're paying almost no interest on that loan, that car is not worth what it is when you go to trade it back
right.
in.
Yep.
So the one area that it gets a little bit interesting is, and I'm not a leasing fan at all, but leasing may actually have a bit of an advantage because depending on what happens with the market, you may be able to buy your car that you leased for 3 years at the end of the term, and you may find that because of supply and demand, it's worth quite a bit more than it was, than they thought it was going to be worth. So say you leased a $45,000 car, and at the end of 3 years, you can buy it for $18,000. Well, that three-year car might actually be worth $25,000.
Right. Yep.
So it may be an advantage to both keep it because it's more valuable, but it also might be an advantage as a trade-in towards something else as
well.
Yeah,
each individual situation is going to be different, right, depending on
your financial
status.
It is. Yeah. So that's where it becomes a little bit tricky to be able to forecast the future, and my crystal ball these days is pretty cloudy.
All right, we won't follow John on the racetrack or in the stock market.
That's right.
Hey, let's talk about flooding, just because of what happened yesterday and what that does to cars and what we should do in case of a flood if we're on the road.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is, don't try to make your way through it.
Turn around, drown, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it really comes down to, it doesn't take much more than 10 or 12 inches of water to actually float a car. So a car can literally start to float in 12 inches of water.
Wow.
You can start to hydroplane in, in millimeters of mm-hmm. water. So the idea that you're going to lose control because you drove through a puddle, and a lot of people think, well, I'm driving a 4,000-pound car. It's going to be fine. The water's going to come up to the edge of the door ledge or something. I'll be fine. But what can happen is the car can actually start to float and you'll lose control.
Yeah.
So exactly, turn around and don't drown is a good way to think about that. Also, what can happen is, especially new cars today, if you drive through them, and when you think about a new car and an engine in a new car, it's nothing more than a pump. It sucks in air and it pushes air out the exhaust pipe. Well, if you drive through water, it's going to try to suck in water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go way back to high school chemistry, you can't compress a liquid. And your engine is going to try to compress that liquid. And if it gets into the cylinders, it's going to do something called hydrolock, which basically it's going to try to compress that liquid, and it's going to bend things like connecting rods in the engine and brake valves and all kinds of nasty things. So you're thinking, well, I have this SUV. I can drive through that. Well, you may find at the end of making it through, all of a sudden it starts to rattle and make noise, and you've just caused $12,000 worth of engine damage.
Wow, yeah.
That's one of the things you really just have to be aware of. Plus, depending on what kind of water it is, electrical connections can fail. People think, and I think I saw this on the news last night, somebody said, well, I thought I could drive through it because the check engine light didn't come on. Well, you have to remember all those components are pretty waterproof. But that doesn't mean everything's going to work the way it's supposed to. And you can do some serious damage. And in most cases, when a car is completely flooded, it fills with water inside, that car is going to be deemed a total because the electronics that sit in the car, things for like the airbag systems mm-hmm. and other systems inside the car, those are going to be too wet to be able to repair. And basically today we're driving rolling computers. And when those electronics get wet, I mean, you think about your cell phone. you drop it in the water and it's not good anymore. You
Right.
really can't stick to, you really can't stick a car in a big bag of rice.
Exactly. And I was thinking that as I saw some of those flooded out cars. Would those folks know right away if they were going to have a problem, if they were able to get through the flood and then come up the other?
If the car started up and seemed to run okay,
Yeah.
time will be the key thing that will tell them whether the car is okay or not.
Okay. All right.
I would recommend that anybody who drove through several feet of water and made it out the other side and the car seemed to be performing okay, I would still want to go to your local repair shop and have them give the car a good look over. There may be fluids that have been contaminated with water, things like
Okay.
that might be a good idea to change them just to make sure. And if nothing else, all they might do is put it up in the air with the hood open and just let the car really dry out and see what's going on there,
Okay.
and
Okay.
then decide at that point whether you need to put in an insurance claim or not.
And then I'm sure salt water is a whole different ball game, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Salt water, because it's so corrosive, it gets inside the panels or the doors and all of that. And you might think that, well, I got a little bit of water in the door. I opened up the door and, some water came out. Well, chances are in a year, you're going to see those doors all start to rust away,
Yeah.
and electronics and salt water just do not mix together.
Yeah. What about electric vehicles, John? Are those more susceptible to flood issues?
Most people ask me if I drove through deep water with an electric vehicle, would I get
Well,
electrocuted?
right, electricity and water, they don't mix, right?
I mean, some of these cars are 800-volt systems. Probably not. In fact, most electric cars can manage to get through 12 inches of water without any real problem. The batteries in the cars are below the floor, and they're very well sealed up. But if months and months ago you hit something in the road and car seems okay, you didn't think much of it, and it damaged that battery case to the point where water could get in, well, then yeah, then things are going to be bad. Some of the big electric vehicles like the Ford Lightning, the Chevy and GMC pickup trucks, the GMC Hummer truck, I mean, they claim you can drive through 24 inches of water. Tesla Cybertruck claims the same thing. You can adjust the suspension and get it up higher. Still not a good idea.
It's not a boat.
It's not a boat, exactly.
Exactly.
And it is something that, can water get into the vehicle? Yeah, it still can. The door seals aren't perfect in any car, so water can still get into the interior compartment, and that can cause some problems. And if the car just gets wet, you say, well, I opened the door, water came out, I didn't think anything of it. Think of the mold and mildew that's going to build up inside there. So try to avoid doing that.
Sure. Do you know other special flood policies for cars like there are for homes?
Not yet. If we keep seeing floods like this, there might be, but so far your regular collision coverage will cover flood damage. So
Okay. Hopefully we didn't just give them an idea. Oh, we can make
I
some
know.
more money.
I know, exactly.
Let's talk about summer car care then, seeing as we're on the topic, John. What should we be doing with our vehicles to get through the hot weather?
Well, it really all begins with the battery, because everybody thinks batteries fail in the wintertime, and they do because they're stressed, but it's actually the summer heat that causes the chemistry of a battery to fail. And you may have a 3 or 4 year old battery, 5 year old battery in a car that's been performing perfectly fine. It sits out on a 90 degree day, you go to start it, and all of a sudden there's nothing, not even a hint of anything, and the battery just went bad. So start with the battery. If the battery is more than 3 years old, have it tested. It's very easy to test a battery these days. If it's more than 5 or 6 years old, maybe think about replacing it. I use my own car as kind of an example. The battery in my car, I think, was 6 years old. It tested okay, but I'm like, I don't want to have a problem. I'm just going to go put a new battery in and get it over with.
Okay,
So
and they typically have
batteries,
dates on them, right? So you can see how old it is.
you can see, and sometimes it might be code, and other times it's a legitimate sticker that says 820 on the side of it. It was, that's how old it is. So start with the battery. All the vital fluids, engine oil changes are important. A lot of people with extended oil changes don't think to check their oil as often as they should.
Yep.
And as cars get older, and even some new cars, they can go through a quart of oil every 1,000 miles or so. And if you're, you know, following your owner's manual and it says, oh, I only have to change my oil once a year or every 10,000 miles, mm-hmm. and if your car uses 2, 3, 4 quarts of oil, there's not enough oil in the engine left. And even just being down a quart of oil can cause the engine to run hot.
Really?
And mm-hmm. oil contributes to about 25% of engine cooling. So if your oil's low, your car's going to want to run hotter. Combine that with an older cooling system, maybe a radiator that hasn't gotten service regularly. You could have an overheating problem out on the highway. So, you know, there's those kind of things to look at. Also, today's cars, we're seeing cars that are the average age of the fleet of vehicles in the United States right now is over 12 years old. That doesn't mean your car is 12 years old, my car is 12 years old, but I do have a 12-year-old car. So, yes.
So no, mine's older, actually.
yeah. So, it you know, as those cars get older, they can be more prone to mechanical problems. So getting your car into a garage and having it looked at periodically is a good idea. Radiator hoses and drive belts, which when I first was in the auto repair business, you'd replace radiator hoses every 2 or 3 years and fan belts every 2 or 3 years. Now they easily last 10 years, if not longer.
Wow.
But it doesn't mean they're going to last forever. So, you know, make sure they're still in good condition. Look at the tires. The tires are the only part of your car that touches the road, hopefully, at least. And you want to make sure they're in good condition. And although they might barely pass the state inspection, they might be worn to the point where they're not going to give you good traction in wet weather. So, you know, as we've sort of been in the rainy season here, it seems like, at least the weekends.
Yes.
you know, having a tire with, say, barely passing the state inspection and one that's half worn on a wet road at 60 miles an hour, the stopping distance is probably 60 or 70 feet difference.
Wow. Okay.
And that's the length, that's more than the length of a tractor trailer. And think about that. That's the difference between a crash and one that didn't happen.
Sure. Okay.
So, you know, make sure that your tire's in good shape. People think about windshield wiper blades when it rains and then it stops raining and they forget about their wiper blades
True.
Again.
Yes.
If your wiper blades are chattering and streaking, go replace them. Wiper blades are one of those things that I don't know when they started getting so expensive, but they have started getting expensive. But still, how much money do you want to spend to be able to see good? You know, so, you know, get good quality wiper blades, replace them once a year or so. Maybe you can get by 2 years with wiper blades, maybe less often. If you use your windshield wiper blades in the wintertime to clean your frosty windshield, that's sort of like dragging them over sandpaper, so
right.
they're not going to last very long.
Yep.
And the same thing, if you live near the water, you know, salt accumulates on the windshield. That salt does the same thing. It can deteriorate the blades. So it's always a good idea to, you know, pay attention to the windshield wiper blades. Make sure all the lights on the car are working the way they're supposed to. But good preventative maintenance. And if you're one of those people that drives around with their check engine light on all the time, go get it fixed.
Okay.
You know, that check engine light could be something minor that's not really affecting the vehicle.
Yeah.
But it also could be stealing away gas mileage. So as you're driving around with that check engine light on, you could be losing 2, 3, 4 miles per gallon.
Okay.
So, you know, get that taken care of. And, you know, finally, people still run out of gas, and so many people think the low fuel light in their car is a reminder to get gas, and it's not. It's a warning. It means you're going to run out of gas soon, and soon might be 25, 30, 40 miles, but still, when you're driving around with the low fuel light on, there's not much fuel in the gas tank. There's a fuel pump in the gas tank, and there's, in a lot of cases, another fuel pump in the car, but that fuel pump in the gas tank is designed to be cooled by the gasoline in the tank. And if you drive around with almost no gas in the car all the time, it's going to overheat that fuel pump and it's going to shorten its life.
Okay.
So you know, get gas when it gets down to a quarter. Don't wait till the light comes on.
All good advice, John. Always a pleasure. And I wish you a very happy, safe summer driving season.
As to you and all your viewers, Joe.
Thanks very much.